The Christian viewpoint, let's forget about the sermon and move on, Pastor. The Christian viewpoint is this. Number one, the impersonal, infinite God created the universe as separate from himself. Why is there something? Because God created it. We have an explanation for why it's there. Second, the personal, infinite God created man in his image. He is a person, and he has meaning as a person because he was created by a person. The personality that we experience in our comes from personality. I have a reason for these two things up here. Why does the universe have order? It's not chaos. Because God has created. My presuppositions say God has created. He is a reasonable God. He has created order. Why is my personality valid? Because God himself is personal, and he has created me in his image. I have a valid personality because he is personal. He's a person. That sounds real simple, doesn't it? Does that sound simple to you?
There's an illustration that Sherry usually helped me on that. Is he says that, let's say you have a body of water here in the valley, and it's beginning to rise. And you know that there's a stream on the other side of the mountain that you feel like this water is coming from. But if the water in the valley rises higher than the stream on the other side of the mountain, then you know that that stream can't be a source. Because, the water has got to come from a source. It can't come from a source lower than what it is. You've got to find another source where the water would rise into. And that's what it says about personality. Personality is higher than a molecule or rock. It's got to come from a source at least as high as it is or higher.
That's good. You follow? Some of you look pretty blank. Okay. The atheist cannot explain why you have meaning, or even why you exist as a person. You're zero. But I can. I've got a reason. And on the basis of presuppositions, if we've got this universe, my presuppositions work out a whole lot better than his do. And that's logical. Second thing is in the area of knowing. The observation about the universe, epistemology, the observation, what kind of fact is it that you observe that the atheist can't explain? The fact is that man has sufficiently accurate knowledge to move about in the universe, to be successful. Successful in his environment. And to communicate with others. Man has sufficiently accurate knowledge to be successful in his environment and communicate with others. You can play baseball. Occasionally you hit the ball. Why? Because you've been able to see the thing coming in. And you're able to correspond with your environment. Send that thing on out there. Now, two hypotheses. One, that everything is a closed system. That is, that the universe is just a closed box. What the atheist says. We only have natural law operating. The other is that the universe is open to God who's there. There is cause and effect. but it's open for God's reordering or intervention. Okay, what's wrong with saying that the universe is all we have is just natural law operating in the universe? There's nobody there. How does this affect the fact that we can know things? Okay, number one, the major thing that's wrong with it, just science, scientific law operating in the universe, is it doesn't guarantee that you can know. I'll show you what I mean. How do you know you're sitting where you are? How do you know I'm here? How do you know the floor is there? On the basis of scientific principles operating in the universe, how would you know, say, whether or not Sam is here? How would you do it? Read his name tag.
5 senses.
Everybody come over and touch Sam. You've got to touch elbows. Okay, you can try your 5 senses. But those could be fake. There might be something in between my fingers and my brain that doesn't really correspond to my environment. I've got a short circuit. And I wonder, well, how can I know for sure he's there then? How can you know? You tell me. How do you know?
Because we can see he's taking us.
We're just imagining.
Maybe this is a group hallucination.
Maybe it's a joke. I don't know. I think hello,
John. How do you know? How does a Christian know? See, that's what an atheist would say. A Christian has a basis for that, though. You said you believe your senses were right and that he's there. Okay, an atheist could say that, and I could say, well, what makes you believe your senses are right? I've never been wrong before. There's always a first time for everything. How does a Christian know?
If a belief
in a personal God, why would he create senses then that would not be reasonably accurate? At this point, you know, give you part of his own personality, which is essentially good, why would he give you senses that are reasonably accurate? Okay, take the Christian presuppositions and work it out to a conclusion. God, the infinite personal God, has created the universe. That's number one. That means a couple of important things. Number one, the universe has objective reality. It is real. It's not just an extension of God. God made the heavens and the earth. That means God made them. They're not God. Hinduism says that everything is God. God just sort of wrapped up in everything. That is God. Well, Christianity says, no, God made everything. I make a ball of clay. It's not me. It's a part of me. Reality is objective. It has objective value to it. It's there because he put it there. Okay, question. How can I know it's there? Okay, that same infinite personal God created man. And he created man with the ability to know. He created order and formed the universe and created man with the capacities in his mind to see that order and form. So I know this is here because God has created first. It is real. He created what is real. And second, he has given me the ability to know. He made my mind to be able to correspond to reality. Now, does that mean I can know everything? No. But I can know adequately.
So we can pull on the observation of being able to move around in one's world, being able to be successful.
Right. I can, whenever I cross the street, I don't get run over all the time. Because I see trucks coming. They are, number one, they are real trucks. I don't run out in the street with trucks in. Number two, I can tell when they go by. Because God has made my mind to correspond with what's going on in reality. He made reality, and He made a mind to correspond to it. So I don't get run over whenever I cross the street.
Maybe this is jumping down a little bit to the moral argument, but then what about people, for example, who visit the handicapped, who do not have the ability to see the field? Why did God make it? But of course, maybe I'm skipping
a bit
too
far. Yeah, just a little bit farther ahead. There's no guarantee to the atheist that he can know anything. But I do have a guarantee I can, because the God who has a mind, who is a person, has created the universe, it's real. And He's given me the mind to comprehend the universe. And not totally, I don't have an infinite mind. I don't know everything, but I can know adequately. I don't know all that's going on inside that truck at the minute, but I know enough not to get run over. Okay? So one thing is, this just doesn't allow you to know that you know. Another thing it allows you to do, let me give you the advantage of the Christian position. We'll move along. Christian position allows this. Christians have a certain knowledge, and they can distinguish between what is there objectively in contrast to hallucination and illusion. Okay, God has made what is real, and He's made me to know. I can tell the difference between this wall being there and the wall not being there. Number one, I can know, and I can know the difference between hallucination and illusion. Second, I can know you. Individual persons can know each other personally. Somebody asked that a while ago about the existentialists. You know, if you don't know what it is that gives you meaning in life, how can you tell others about me? Well, you can't. As a matter of fact, whenever you start talking about meaning, purpose, and all that, you don't really know what's going on in anybody else's mind. The atheist doesn't know if anything's. If whenever he talks to you, you're really, he can't show that you're hearing anything. But the Christian can't. Why? God made men in His image as verbalizers. God communicates. He's a communicator. He has made men to communicate. I can know men personally. And He has made our categories and minds somehow. That is, Wayne's mind is not significantly different from mine. We are able to perceive reality together.
I'm not sure about that. Yours is significantly better than mine.
It's warped a little. Know that. But see, whenever I talk about dog, we think about dog. Now, Wayne may not know about the dog that bit me whenever I was five. But whenever I say, "Watch out, Wayne, there's a dog," he can get out of the way. There's a correspondence in our mind. We really can't correspond with each other. Because God has made men, number one, as verbalizers. They can't communicate. And number two, with the same types of minds. So one, we know that we can know. And I can tell the difference between whether it's me dreaming or the butterfly dreaming. Why? I can wake up, the butterfly can't. How do I know I can wake up? How do I know? Because I wake up, and the world is real. It's there. God's put it there. How do I know it's there? Because I can touch it, see. And there is a correspondence between my mind corresponds to reality. This has a third big impact. God, who made the world, who made men able to know, has a third big impact. Sets man free to be creative.
How does the fact that you can take, okay, you keep using touch, but that's a little harder to faith than, say, hearing or seeing or smelling or tasting. And you mentioned earlier that you can cool the senses. And even as a human being, my senses and your senses can be cooled. Your audiovisual effects, and et cetera, et cetera. So how does that get away from you? I mean, how do you know, for example, something you see is real or an illusion? Just because you're existing. I still test you.
Nope. But you saw it coming.
Okay.
You didn't reach over there.
There.
See, the place where it works out is in practical daily living.
Okay.
See, the atheist can't live with that. Well, how do I know it's not just an illusion? How do you know it's not just an illusion? Because I don't step out in front of trucks.
You very bad you got two different words. You've got reality and you've got illusion. We admit the fact there is such a thing as an illusion. There can be an illusion, but there's also a real.
Because we've already experienced
it. Yes, claims that an illusion is reality.
Well, his big doubt doesn't work out practically. Take a swing at him, see if he does. That's right. And that's what I'm telling you. So you don't step out in front of trucks. Why? Because you know if you step out in front of trucks, you'll get run over too. But I can't really know that. Yeah, you can. That's right. That's right. The way he lives will be in contradiction to his big theory. And you can make improvement.
The Christian view is still a faith in yourself as each of these a lot closer to faith.
History out. Right. We're comparing his hypothesis to ours. And ours, logically, is coming out to fit reality a little bit. That could raise all kinds of doubts about, well, what could be, what could be, what could be.
Yeah, I didn't know you might have a butterfly here.
Yeah. Because you don't see the butterfly like around here, do you?
No. Okay, we brought up the presupposition that there's only natural law. That's what you pointed out, that there's only natural law. And we say that you can't trust natural law. How do you know that everything's consistent and illusion? We've got to convince him of that, don't we? I mean, he's got to see that closed system relies on the reliability of nature. Could you elaborate a little bit on maybe how to make sure that we have that person see that?
In just a second. Let me throw out a couple more things and then we'll do it. Okay.
I'm kind of confused. I was following the line until something else asked a question I had about would natural law be telling you to the truck of my normal? I mean, just being supernatural?
That's right. Natural law would. You see. See, the thing is, you see this truck coming and you know if you stand there, cause and effect is going to take over. And you know that. Natural, that's the way the universe is put together. But the atheist says, in order to maintain, well, then you ask him, how do you know that? Well, I just know.
What if they say they know it because it works?
I'd ask him how they know it works. See, the thing is in the knowing. They can't know anything certain, whether it's an idea or a cause effect. We'll come back to it in a second. This thing about man is free to be creative. I can tell the difference between the real and the unreal. God has given me imagination, and I can rearrange things See, I can make pictures. I can tell, like this over here. I don't have to pick up a paintbrush and wonder if it's there, sit and wonder all day long. I can go ahead and I can paint. I don't have to wonder if they're thinking about me because I know they're objects. I am free to go ahead and create the universe. I can tell the difference between illusion and reality. Now, it may seem like a minor point, but it's really important. Creativity is important to a lot of people. Do you know that? Artists in particular want to be creative. There has to be a reason for creativity. But if you can't tell the difference between the reality and the illusion, how can you create? You can't. Can't really know the difference. Let me just suggest the thing on the moral argument, and then we'll go to crack clarification. The moral argument is this. Man is noble, yet he is cruel. All throughout man's history, the observation, man's noble or cruel. All throughout man's history, he has done great things. He's built great buildings. He's formed great governments. Art, he's been able to produce. Great philosophical system, he's done great things. He's, you know, landed on Mars, he's gone to the moon. And yet at the same time, in the midst of all these great things, man has been horribly cruel. Do you know about the culture of the Ninevites?
Nineveh?
Assyria. One of their big deals, you know, the Romans threw people to the animals and all. Let them eat. One of the Ninevites' big deals is skin people alive. Take them out, lay them out, and get the knife out and start. Laying out the hide for a leather purse while the man is still alive. That's cruel. The atrocities in war just turn your stomach. Why is man both noble and cruel? Everybody has to admit to that. Why is it? If you start with an impersonal beginning, you know, just time plus chance, all that stuff, you come up with this. Number one, there is no difference between cruel and noble. All you have is animals, you know, survival of the fittest. The fittest of the race makes it, and they reproduce. What do you mean when you say cruel? There is no difference between cruel and noble. There are no morals. You can talk about what is antisocial or what I don't like, but you cannot talk about right and wrong. Illustration of this, murder. Okay, you can say, well, murder is antisocial. We can't go around murdering each other. Okay, but is murder wrong? Well, you can't make value judgments. Nothing is intrinsically wrong, as a matter of fact. How I use this in witnessing for the atheists? I talk about killing him. Why shouldn't one of your friends come up and just do you in? Pull out a 19-inch knife and run it free. What would be wrong with that? Oh, man, that wouldn't be nice. Well, it's not socially acceptable, but there's nothing wrong with it, is there? Well, I wouldn't enjoy it. Well, that's right, but there's nothing wrong with it, is there? No. You ultimately end up with no morals. Christian answer? See, all you have is just molecules interacting with each other. Two giant hunks of molecules get together, and one of them just totally clobbers the other into a little hamburger. Now, what's wrong with molecules clobbering each other? Nothing. Man has no meaning. Morals have no meaning. The Christians have an answer, though. God made man, and he made him noble. He made him capable of high aspirations. But man, by his own choice, rebelled. Man chose to rebel against the will of God. So you have this dilemma. Man has become cruel. He was not originally, but he has become cruel. Yet he retains the marks of his nobility. That's what the Christian says. He retains his mannishness, though he has now become cruel. Now, that doesn't surprise you necessarily, but what are the advantages of that kind of Christian position on man? Well, number one, it tells why man is cruel and yet noble. See, the atheist must end up saying there is no cruelty, there is no nobility. Man is just an animal. It tells why he has noble aspirations and yet can be cruel. Number two, it allows for our moral absolutes. See, man rebelled against God's absolute standards. And in all this turmoil and chaos in the world, whenever governments are being toppled and people are being persecuted, the heart of man cries out, "It's wrong!" And a Christian can say, "That's right." Because this is against God's eternal standards. Man wants to declare things wrong. He just has no reason to, whenever he holds an atheistic view. So there are moral absolutes that correspond to man's cry for justice. Third thing, there is a basis for fighting against social evil and injustice. Everybody wants to crusade against social evil. Why? You know, it's not hurting me. I live pretty well. Well, but it's wrong. Well, why is it wrong? Well, there is a reason to fight against moral evil. Now, the Hindu doesn't have a reason. This is sort of another assumption here. The Hindu believes all ultimately comes from one thing. The one great thing you're putting behind the universe. Both evil and good come from the same place. You fight evil, you're fighting God. You fight good, you're fighting God. They have sort of a weird approach there. But man's cruelty and results, however, are contrary to what God has desired. Contrary to what he made. So there is a basis for fighting against social injustice. Without fighting against God. Another thing. Man has true moral guilt that corresponds to guilt feelings. Everybody's got guilt feelings. Nobody knows what to do about them. The Freudian psychologist says, forget it. Get back and find out whether it's your grandmother or your granddaddy that caused this. And then forget it. It's just guilt feelings. But the Christian says, and people go about burdened with guilt. But the Christian says, that's right, you have rebelled against God, and I have the cure for that. God's Son died for you, and that guilt can be lifted. We have a cure for the guilt that man bears and feels. Okay, so we have a reason for morals. We have an explanation of why we are significant as persons in a world that's not personal. Because God made the world and He made us. He is creator and person. We have a reason for being able to know. Because God made a world that's really there and He made me really able to know and communicate. And we have a reason for morals and for the things in our heart that cry out for justice. Because God Himself is just. Man has rebelled, but that's contrary to the nature of God. These things are going on. And we can fight against them. And we can even help relieve the guilt of man whenever he's burdened by what he is doing. How do you use this in witnessing? That question looks like it's probably too much for you. This is heavy. Do you remember last night Richard Cunningham said things were going to be heavy? He wasn't kidding. Let's see if we can apply some of this. Maybe about 3 or 4 minutes long. Take a look at your sheet again. Page 3. Using Schaeffer in evangelism. whenever you're using this, what you'll be doing essentially is taking, you know, observing something in the universe, the fact that he wants to be significant, he wants meaning in his life, for instance. And you'll be comparing your hypothesis with his and pushing him to the point where he has to admit that he's inconsistent. Number one, share out of love. Schaefer's a little bit hard to get hold of. Once you get hold of him, there's this great temptation to go about slaughtering people. It really is. Share out of love. We're not out to slay the Philistines. We're out to see real human beings come to know the living God. And they need to be loved. That's who God is. Second, listen to what the person is saying. Don't get hyper, uptight. What am I going to say next? What am I going to say next? If you'll listen to what he's saying, he'll tell you some things that you can use. What things will he tell you? We'll talk about that in a second. By questioning and listening, find out what his presuppositions are. Ask him. Whenever you get talking, well, what's really going to put life together for you? What's going to really give you meaning? Or what's your major? And begin to dialogue. Find out where he's at. What does he really think about God? There's nothing there. But listen to what he's saying. Find out what his presuppositions are. This, the way I usually find this first, the place it usually surfaces is morals. Nothing's really right or wrong. Well, why do you say that? Well, I just do. I mean, you know, they're all culturally determined. Just where you grew up. Do you believe in God? No, evolution took care of that a long time ago. Oh, okay. Well, you know, this thing about morals being culturally determined, why do you say that? Well, I studied it in sociology. I mean, I know. Well, you know, that's a pretty serious assumption. That's saying that there's nothing wrong in the universe. Really, really wrong. Okay, number one step. Nothing is really wrong, is it? No. I'm not getting these down. Nothing really wrong, is it? No. See, what I'm doing, I'm finding out what has meaning for him. He surfaced it in morals. I want meaning in life. But nothing's really wrong. Find out what has meaning for him. Love, a person, a career, humanity, whatever it is. He loves people. Okay, he loves zeros if he's an atheist. As a matter of fact, love doesn't have any meaning. What is love? Starting with his atheistic presuppositions, show that since there is no God, number one, there are no morals. Okay? There are no morals? No. When nothing is wrong, is it? First step. Nothing is really wrong in itself. No, it's not. Then I will work my way to the most repulsive thing there is to him. I'll start getting worse and worse and worse. Well, you know, that's what you're saying then is people, if you have this kind of universe, this is another important step. People don't really have any intrinsic meaning, do they? By what you're saying, people are no more than vacuum cleaners, are they? Well, let me think about that. Yeah, that's right. You know, there's man, machine, matter, all that stuff. Yeah, I guess ultimately that's right. Biological mechanism. There's nothing wrong with unplugging vacuum cleaners, is there? Well, no. Nothing wrong with killing people, is there? And after all, they're zero. Nothing wrong with erasing zeros. Well, I guess that's right. Morals are culturally determined, aren't they? Yeah. The Hitler thing is the best one for me. Hitler's wiping out of 6 million Jews was approved by a society, so there's nothing wrong with wiping out 6 million Jews, is there? They choke on that one. Genocide? That goes against the grain of humanism. Well, I guess not. And then I try to go for the heart. I look to see what's really important to them. If it's mom, I go for mom. If it's dad, I go for dad. I did this with a fellow one time at Cal State LA. The guy, California State University, Los Angeles, he sat down at my table and started a conversation, so I had a perfect right. And we got into Christianity. We developed a good rapport. He knew that I wasn't angry or mad. We'd talk and discuss things. And he did this thing, well, morals are just culturally determined. Okay, well, what about Hitler? Well, no, I guess that wasn't wrong. Not really, ultimately wrong. I saw a ring on his finger. And I said, what you're saying to me is, I said, you are married, aren't you? Yes. How long have you been married? 2 years. Well, I know that marriage is still pretty tender at 2 years. So I said, what you're saying to me is, and this is a good one, you're sitting at home one evening with your wife, relaxing, and someone breaks in the door. A man breaks in the door, and he grabs your wife and throws her on the floor and rapes her. Then he pulls a knife out of his pocket and begins carving her up into little bitty bits. You shouldn't get excited, should you? There's nothing wrong going on. And he looked at me real hard, you know, and his eyes got sort of weak, you know, eyes were sort of weak. And he said, no, I guess not.
You're kidding, no. You're kidding.
You know what I said? See, that I could tell it's going contrary to everything inside of me. And I said, you know better than that. I said, you know, right in you right now, you're crying out, that's wrong. I said, you know it'd be wrong. I said, you just don't know why. And I do. And I shared the gospel with him. So do you follow the line of attack? I go for the repulsive. Or the thing that just totally drives them over the edge of the cliff. Now watch. I don't want to get crude. See, I don't want to bear witness that God is crude. I don't just go for gross things. But I try to go for where their heart is.
The nerve.
Yeah, the nerve. The place, the tender spot in their heart has no meanings. If it's a girlfriend, it'd be the same thing. Boyfriend, same thing. Mom, same thing. If somebody just, you know, knocked your mother down and stomped with hobnail boots until she's just a little puddle, it wouldn't be wrong, would it? And their heart will cry out, yes! And they'll sit there for a minute. This fellow at Cal State LA, he's the one that told me, but I'm not converted. You know, I'm inconsistent. Yeah, that's right, but I'm not converted. I said, well, you don't look converted. I said, and whenever we finished our conversation, I said, well, you know, you don't have any intellectual objections to Christianity anymore, do you? His voice said, he said, well, I said, you're more inconsistent than Christianity, aren't you? He said, I said, well, I hope you find what I've shared with you. I hope that you plug into it. Because God has given meaning to my life. And He's changing me daily. So I heard about answered prayer before, but now I haven't. I just loved on the guy then. And went away. And he's still sort of quivering there, though.
Did you ever find out what happened to him?
It was one of those situations that God brings along.
Can you briefly share the developing conversation with this gentleman here about 60 million?
Okay. We talked briefly. God worked it out. A lady died on an airplane coming in from Montego Bay into Miami. Mm. They impounded the airplane to investigate why and all this stuff. That was my plane to Dallas. That messed up my whole schedule, and I know whenever I fly that God's in charge of scheduling, so that means I'm going to share it with somebody. So I don't know that she had to die for me to share, but out of all that developed, I know that God was working something. So I ended up next to this guy, about 46, sharp looking fellow, and as we rode along, he's tearing pages out of magazines, restaurant magazines, and he owns a chain personally, a well known chain coast to coast, and we just started talking. What are you doing? I work in the restaurant business. Well, what are you doing? You know, you cook, run business, or what? Come to find out, I own $60 million worth of property himself. And I asked him, my approach is this.
Who are you? What are you doing? Where are you from? You know, it's great to meet you. And somewhere in there, I'll say, what's your religious background? I'll bring up mine. I'll surface mine. And then ask them about theirs. Well, what kind of things are you into? Well, all several things. A lot of things have been happening lately. One of the things that's been really different in my life is just a commitment I made to Christ. That set me a bunch of new directions I'm still exploring. Oh, you want to talk to that? So I'll talk a little bit about my religious background and then ask him his. Okay. Well, I was a Methodist. Well, you were a Methodist? Now you're not one now? No, I changed. Well, what happened? Well, we're down a little bit further. His wife had died and he got mad at God. How can I be a good God if they're suffering me in the world? I could sympathize with that. I have some hard questions for myself. So I did. I sympathized. I see why you'd ask that. And he said, well, how did your background develop? So I told him all about mine, where I was. And then I asked him, what are you into now? Well, I'm not into any religion. I'm just, you know, being a successful businessman, making millions upon millions of dollars, enjoying myself. And I said, what's really going to give your life fulfillment? And here's a guy, $60 million. What's really going to fulfill your life? Because I knew it wasn't money. You already had all that. He said, well, you know, I really don't know. I've been trying to figure it out lately. I haven't thought, would I go into politics or what? And so I started into that angle. What really fulfills a man? God has made man for certain things. Man can do a lot of great things, but until he plugs in on what God has, he'll be ultimately unfulfilled. And he said that. He said, I've accomplished all the goals I ever set. 46 years old. Accomplished all the goals I ever set. I don't know what all of them is. So I share it. God has created, and he's created for a purpose. That's why I share it with that.
I've been talking with somebody where I work, and the most important thing to him is money because he can buy drugs and booze. So I hope he's getting that kind of
money. I start with where they are. See this thing right here? I start with where they are and show how their presuppositions are eventually going to drive them up the wall. And if a person says, well, man, this is what I want right now. I want drugs and booze. Go your way and enjoy yourself. Because next year, you're going to find the drugs are going to take more. And the year after that, it's going to eat a bigger part of your life. And then in a very few years, there's not going to be anything of you left. So I extrapolate, you know. And that scares and amuses me. And I tell how God has given me meaning and putting me together instead of disintegrating. But you can't club anybody into giving up what they really want.
Don't most people already know what you extrapolate, though? I mean, everybody knows it, can't see.
Yeah, but people like to forget that, see. People like to forget that. I just take it on out and show it to them. Boy, look at that, see that right there, see that, see that. That's not nice at all, is it? You don't like that, do you? But that's what you say you want. Enjoy yourself. And I do it in love. With people. And I try to see him again. I come back around. How's it going? You got any more insight on what you really want out of life? This thing right here. Go for no morals. If he says no morals, I go for the thing that's just tender in his heart, and I take it step by step. People have no meaning, it's usually persons. People have no meaning. Wiping out zeros is not wrong, is it? No. Taking your favorite zero and wiping it out is not wrong either. Is it? And that hurts. That hurts. A person, then this is the second part of that. A person, especially the one that this person that you're talking to values the most, has no meaning, same as a machine or a rock or a toadstool. Second, you say that you love this person, but you can't even really know if they're there, can you? Maybe you reach out to hold hands. You don't even know if you're really holding hands. Are you communicating? How do you know whenever she says she loves you that you know what she means?
What she's thinking, what she says, love is the same as the difference.
Right. And then the last part, that person can be torturously destroyed. It wouldn't be moral. Love or any other ideal, beauty, humanity, has no real meaning. What is love? Well, it's this nice warm feeling. Well, what's a feeling? Well, it's a... you can't know. And ultimately, these great ideals are no worse than the cruelest thing they got, or no better than the cruelest thing. Show how Christianity answers a particular issue. I'd give, try to give you an outline for doing that. Share the gospel then. Well, this is what's putting my life together. And I'm just sharing. This is how I'm getting put together. Stay open if he rejects Christ and keep a notebook on lessons learned. If you find good questions, share them around. The steps of being able to help others. Number one, keep a notebook. Learn from the situations you go through. Number two, this is an absolute minimum reading. If you're going to use Schaefer, you need to read these two. The other things will help you. Three, review your seminar notes. As you're trying to help others, focus on the how-tos. Then after a witnessing experience, ask yourself, critique, evaluate yourself, and get somebody else to do you. What did I do wrong? Did I make too big a step? Well, you don't believe in morals? If somebody running over your mother with a truck wouldn't be wrong, would it? Well, yeah, my mother's nice. Well, make some smaller steps. Persons have no meaning, do they?
Have another one of these.
Keep the focus in your group finally, on helping others come to know Christ, not on trapping others with questions. I'll be available during the day if you got some specific things you'd like to talk about. Schaefer is probably one of the heaviest areas you can get into. But in essence, what he does is take atheistic presuppositions, compare it with the Christian. Why persons have significance, why the universe is there and people have significance. How I can really know. And then why some things are wrong. And we always come out of time. Now his approach in witnessing is go feeling around and find that tender spot. And once you find it, take that ask presupposition that you get to drive him over the edge of the cliff. Starting with your atheistic presuppositions, persons have no meaning. There are no morals. And your mother and hamburger, not really. Cattle, rocks. And you begin to push more. And whenever they see where they're going, share how God has put you together.